Blog Talk Radio.
Press two.
I already pressed it. All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
And this is the Tornado, Tony Pennycal.
And we're coming at you with another fine edition of the Combat Sports Show, Fight News Unlimited. And we got a lot to cover this week. Three, count them, one, two, three UFC events in the last week. I only covered a preview of one of them last week. I had no idea there was going to be one on Sunday and last night, but I did see them all. We had some boxing over the weekend, too. Little bit of controversy with the fight between Keith Thurman and Luis Collazo. I didn't really get Collazo's explanation after the fight, but apparently because he said he couldn't see, they stopped that fight. He was coming back, sort of. I don't think he was going to win the fight, but I thought he was making a go of it, and then all of a sudden they stopped the fight late in the action. So that was kind of a letdown, but it is what it is. And your boy Hank Lundy didn't have a good night at the office on Saturday either.
Yeah, and like I said, I didn't get to see the fight. I was away last week. But, you know, I heard it was sloppy. I heard it was pretty sloppy. And then I heard he was lunging a lot and caused some headbutts, and unfortunately, you know, fight got stopped and went to the cards, and he didn't get the decision.
And Mr. Psychic Tom Padgett is here.
All right, guys. How we doing?
Good, good, good.
Doing good. How are you?
Good.
And
still surprised about last night, but Frank Mir remains the one guy I can't figure out. Wow. What a performance.
Yeah, pretty bullish on his part for sure.
I'll tell you what, Tony, this Frank Mir had been sparring with Bernard Sturveen, I believe, you know, the old the one Wilder beat. And supposedly was holding his own. Now, I was a little skeptical of that, but last night he landed a straight left hand right down the pipe that knocked his power-punching opponent out face first. You know how that game goes. When someone falls face first, you know, when someone falls face first, you don't need to count. You could have counted like this one old pro wrestling announcer used to say, they could have counted to 1,000. You know, that's, yeah, so good for him.
And we got three UFC events to talk about. One coming up, of course, on, is it Sunday morning or Saturday morning? Saturday morning.
Saturday morning.
Saturday morning. Cartoons, but it's going to be fight dead from England. No, Scotland. Close enough for Michael Bisping, who's in the headlining event there, main event. Mike Swick is retiring after his loss to Alex Garcia at UFC 189. It was his first fight in 945 days, and wasn't a good result for him. He kind of looked all over the place, didn't really look like he had it together. He said, I was healthy and injury-free for the first time in 8 years, but still couldn't put my game together. There comes a time when every fighter realizes he is older and not what he used to be, and I want to acknowledge this and stay true and honest to what I have always said, that I will leave when I know I am done. It's a hard thing to do considering everyone wants to go out on top. Unfortunately, when you're actually on top, you never want to go out. He also said, it's unfair to the UFC, to the fans, and to my family and friends, me to keep chasing this career while giving performances that I am not proud of.
You know, Rich, I always felt, now I don't know if you remember his career at 185, but, you know, normally when guys go down, they can be more effective, but I don't think it worked that way for him. Just too often he was just out-muscled, as we've seen Saturday night. I mean, he just seemed to have no answer for the takedowns.
Right. And UFC 189 was the big event on Saturday night. There was a lot of news coming out of that one. Of course, the main event did not disappoint. Conor McGregor did get tested, but he passed the test. He got wrestle-fucked, as Tom would say, for a little while, but he was able to get out of there and dispatch Chad Mendes. The interesting thing about this one that nobody seems to be talking about, there was a little bet Conor McGregor supposedly made. And it's not so little for any of us, of course, because it was $3.5 million, according to him. And he supposedly made this bet with Dana White and the Fertittas. And he would win the bet if he knocked out Mendes in the second round. And, of course, what happened was he knocked him out with 3 seconds left in the second round. So,
well, now, to be fair, I didn't see it live. It was just a bad day for me. And by the time I could have went to where I could have seen it and just didn't get there. But I'll say this much. From following it live on the Underground, there were a lot of guys with tinfoil hats on. It was – and normally, you know, you always have a few idiots, but it just seemed like it was a continual flow with that horrible three-letter word, F-I-X. I mean, yeah. It just or at the very least, it was a very premature stoppage. Now I have to reserve comment because I haven't seen it yet, but I know Herb Dean is a great referee, but it just there was something there that he was being dominated right till the last part of it.
34 seconds. He stood up. Got up at 34 seconds left in the round. So basically, mm-hmm. It's 30 seconds from there to knock Mendes out. And he did land some good shots. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he was punishing Mendes' body with a lot of the shots, a lot of kicks from distance, punches. And then those last two, I think it was a 1-2 combination to the face that just laid him out. And, I thought it was a decent stoppage, but it was just kind of a coincidence to me how McGregor was able to get it done in the second round when there was all this talk about this bet and whether all that stuff is legal. I mean, they didn't really describe how the threat was going to break down. The only thing I thought was something about, McGregor said that it was going to be worked into the pay-per-views. So I don't know how that was.
I'm just not sure if the deal was ever sealed on that. Well, I mean, how could we know? I mean,
right.
You're right.
Dana White went on a radio show and talked about the bet. So that's when Conor realized that Dana was going to take it.
I wonder what if Pete Rose can be banned from the Hall of Fame for life for what he did. And he didn't bet against his team, by the way. He didn't bet. He never bet against any team he was always only on two, to my knowledge. But he never bet against his teams, and yet he can be banned for life. And yet these guys are bragging about what they do. And then when you add that little bit of controversy there, it's just to me it left a bad taste in my mouth. Really did. I was kind of. I tried to get psyched up for Mendes, but I don't know where his career is going now. It's been three strikes and you're out. And to me, it's a terrible setback because now do we have to see him get beat up the fourth time? How many more chances do you get to fight for the title and come up short?
It's a tough one, but he did rough McGregor up. You know, he gave him a crack in the eye with an elbow that bloodied him up pretty good, so Conor haters would probably say they enjoyed watching that.
then there's this whole thing about the he only had 2 weeks to prepare. Well, I understand you can't be in fight shape all the time, but you can be in darn good shape. And as a professional fighter, even at the lower levels, I mean, you know, and I know, Tony, you've covered enough boxing. You know that sometimes guys will take fights on a couple days' notice.
Sometimes you have to take fight
with a couple
hours notice. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I even heard Teddy Alice was mentioning one story where the one of the guys was in the stands eating a hot dog. And came up. So my point is, and there was a trainer, Martin Rooney. I don't know who he's working with now, but I just finished an article by him. And like he was saying, this whole 8 week stuff is crazy. I mean, you should never. It's a great excuse to balloon up 40 pounds between fights and just do nothing. I mean, you should always be in decent shape, ready to go at a moment's notice. And 2.5 weeks should be good. And we're starting to hear all these excuses now about from Chad. Well, I mean, I'm not saying he's saying them, but it's, oh, if he'd had a full camp, it would have been different. He was gassing out and everything. Well, you know, whose fault was that?
Right. Well, we also had the co-main event, which was pretty interesting. Psychic Tom, you didn't get this one. I got it.
Okay. Now, we'll let Tony be the judge here, okay? Now, in my defense, Tony, after going into the final round, Lawler needed a knockout, but that's a pretty pathetic argument. It was 39-37 on all three judges' scorecards, and I seen them. They were posted on the Underground. And McDonald just, again, it just seems like that Lawler's boxing carried the day. I mean, I just wish more guys in the MMA world would just catch on to that.
Not only did his boxing carry the day, but his boxing coach resigned after the fight because he said he's done all he needs to do. that for a face saying this guy's perfect at his boxing. Yeah, I don't need to even touch this guy anymore. He's good.
Well, now come on. I don't think anyone would ever say anything like that. Seriously, I mean, there's always room for improvement.
Right.
But, like I said,
he was going to win. It was with a head kick. And, of course, the one moment of the fight where Lawler seemed like he was going down was right after a head kick. And he just weathered the storm and kept right on going. He kind of seemed like he was punch drunk, but at the same time, like, he just was walking through stuff like it wasn't bothering him after that. And, you know, while you're watching, especially being somebody who picked Lawler, I'm sitting there going, geez, you know, he's just zombie fighting out there. But it really was just, he was calm. He was just relaxed, a little too relaxed at some points. But, you know,
and then how about that link you sent me about, it was an interesting article that showed McDonald trying to get up. I believe you sent that. Yeah, and he was trying. And what a pathetic job for that female doctor. My God, she acted like she didn't even want to touch him. You know, didn't she? I think she had high heels on and some fancy dress. Well, you know, you're a doctor. Get in there.
Right.
If you can't do the job, if you're worried about getting blood on your dress, I think you're in the wrong business. I mean, I can't imagine Florence Nightingale worried about a little blood on her skirt.
He was cut pretty badly on the nose, on the forehead. He was bleeding everywhere.
I have to hope he'll come back from this.
It's probably the first time I've ever seen somebody just kind of take a knee from just getting punches so many times in the nose that it was like a 1-2 that ended it, and it wasn't like he was knocked out. It was just he was all done.
And he was trying to sit up because you don't want to have your pride. You don't want carried out. You want to walk out. And that's when that doctor, quote-unquote, came over. And then he just collapsed again. That's when it had to get, it's like, oh, wow. You hate to see that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, he's young.
Victor Lurie, though, you know, he said it was the best time of his life.
Yeah.
It was just a fucked up mentality, if that's true.
Yeah, afterwards. Well, I mean, he's saying the right things about coming back, but sometimes the mental scars from something like that, I mean, his only takeaway is he did seem to have the puzzle figured out, but he just came up a little short in the last round. I mean, he was so close. So maybe that'll erase some of his mental scars. But I'll tell you what, I've seen careers ruined by a lot less than the way he was beat.
Yeah. It's another reason why you need good defense, too.
Exactly, you know, exactly. I mean, you really got me on this kick, too.
Image.
Exactly, and I'll see these guys that are just...
Box that really shines through is his head movement. You know,
right.
Got, exactly the right head movement to always be a moving target. And guys
right.
like McDonald, the reason why their kicks are so good is because they're always basically, you know, able to land from a distance. And then when they get in close, they're not moving their head. You know, they're not, he's not moving around the ring enough trying to get that distance. It's just whenever there's that enough room for a kick, he throws a kick. And, you know, he just happened to land a couple of them pretty good. And one of them almost took Lawler out. It was a pretty tough one.
But remember the old cliche, though, that the hand is quicker than the foot. And
right.
you're allowed to use
it.
And it's, you know, you see these guys bum rushing with their hands down at their hips, and it's like, my God. You know, you've got me on that kick now, Rich, and I'm acutely aware of it every fight I watch.
And when I did karate, I noticed too. You know, when you throw a lot of kicks, your hands are down for balance. Your hands are down by your chest or even lower. So that's kind of a bad habit too, that you kind of have to get away
yeah,
from.
Yeah, exactly. And back in my taekwondo days, I see the difference, and the whole difference there in a point tournament, you're not getting punched in the mouth. But
right.
if you get into an MMA gym and start that and start, you know, throwing those kind of kicks and you know, not trying to block other kicks with your hand and all that other cool kung fu stuff, see what happens. Let me know. Let me know how it works out.
One of my favorite fights of this UFC 189 card was Jeremy Stephens versus Dennis Bermudez. The menace was pretty menacing, but then the little heathen took over.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's when you hate to see either guy lose. But I can't wait to see Bermudez back. I mean, just can't say enough about it.
He was kicking Stevens' ass all over the cage, and then all of a sudden in the third round, Stevens got a fire under his ass, and Joe Rogan just pulled the description out of his ass as far as what Jeremy did. He called it a fadeaway knee, like, you know, when you're in basketball and you throw a fadeaway shot. He said it was a fadeaway knee, which is basically what it was. I mean, if you watch it, he's on one foot, and he springs off of one foot just standing there, you know, not running forward or backwards or anything, just kind of, well, he was kind of moving a little bit backwards. So he just launches himself back towards the fence with one foot, and the other knee comes up, clocks Bermudez right in the head, right in the chin. And then a couple more punches, and it was all over. Finish.
Coming from behind. That's so cool to see.
I don't even know how you even get that in your head to think about doing that. I've never seen it, period. None at all. You know, how to get that momentum going when you're just standing still. So it was like basically a standing flying knee. Just unbelievable. And then we had Gunnar Nelson beat Brandon Thatch by rear naked choke. That was a pretty interesting fight. And it was in the first round, just short of 3 minutes in. We had Thomas Almeida beat Brad Pickett by knockout from a knee in the second round. And Matt Brown, talk about falling, depending on the win there. This was a big win for him. Talk about a guy getting his ass kicked the whole fight until he turned it around, too. That was what Matt did. He was taking a beating a little from Tim.
Yeah.
Just somehow ended up.
Beans, you know. Well, I think both of you guys will agree with me when I say that in a stand-up fight, a tall southpaw who can throw straight punches is just a damn nightmare. It throws accurate, hard punches.
Oh, absolutely.
There was no one worse than that. And it seemed like these left-handed guys, I don't know if they fed them something, and they're like, you know, 3 inches higher, you know, 3 inches taller. But it's just a difficult style to fight. And Brown just didn't seem to have any answers early on. And he's another one that'll sometimes defense is just not really to the forefront of his mind, but he just, you know, he kept going. My God, what up? I mean, because for a while it was looking terrible for him. And you could see nothing he was doing on the feet could penetrate that right jab, and then that straight left down the pipe was just, wow, it was good. But Brown, got to give him credit, came back and got it to the ground and finished it off.
And we had a lot of unanimous decisions on the undercard at the beginning of the whole card. The first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fights of the night were decisions, and 4 of those 5 were unanimous. And so the last unanimous one before the main card was Mike Swick versus Alex Garcia, as we mentioned. Swick retired after this fight. He lost by unanimous decision. John Howard, a buddy of mine from Boston, guy who broke the nose of the Boston bomber there that got killed, Tamerlane, in sparring. John Howard beat Cathal Pendred. Finally, somebody shut that guy up.
yeah, that was because he seemed, you know, and he seems like he's trying to develop more of an MMA style, but I'm telling you, just the lingering memories I have of him not having to fight to get in the house, for one thing, I thought was wrong. And then second, with one of the most pitiful performances. I mean, like it was a karate point tournament. So, John Howard was the underdog going into that fight. I don't know if you knew that. John Howard was not the favorite, but hey, you know, what's that old cliche? When the bell rings, it doesn't matter what the odds makers say. It doesn't matter what the opinions are. One thing matters, and John Howard, boy, that experience did the job. Good for him.
All right. And we had Cody Garbrandt beat Enrico Briones by decision. Louis Smoka beat Neil Seary. These are all unanimous decisions. And the first fight of the night, Cody Fister beat Yosdenis Cedeno by unanimous decision. And let's see, we had Sunday night. Main event was Stephen Thompson versus Jake Ellenberger for the Ultimate Fighter 21 finale. And Stephen Thompson got me doing the wheel kick now. And I realized it's actually not that hard to land to the head. You know, it's probably one of the only kicks that I can get to the head easily without doing a shitload of stretching out my legs and getting the flexibility going. Spinning hook kick.
I don't think we'd have seen much of anything like that 10 years ago all. But my attitude toward that stuff, if you can make it work, great. It's kind of a dangerous move, and you can't be worried about being taken down. But, yeah, that was just perfect timing. And Ellenberg, you know, it seems like you have such a short window where you're really on top. I mean, he was just really going places, but then a couple setbacks, and I think he's really heading downhill. Ellenberg.
Yeah, he was doing all right in this fight, but just, that Stephen Thompson's jab, too, was spectacular. I mean, his kicks, obviously he landed a couple of those spinning hook kicks that really hurt Ellenberger, but, you know, people might forget that he also had a really snappy jab in that fight that was working for him and connecting a lot. But very impressive for him. He goes to 11-1. Ellenberger falls to 30-10. And that was the end game at 4:29 of the first round. So just 31 seconds left till the bell, and Ellenberger couldn't make it. Then we had the Ultimate Fighter finale fight, Kamaru Usman from Black Zillions versus Haider Hassan from American Top Team. And Usman did the job. He got the arm triangle choke in the second round at the 119 mark, and Hassan just got his butt kicked left and right all over the cage. But there was an American Top Team guy that did pull off the win and looked so much improved from the show. Michael Graves beat Vicente Luque by unanimous decision, and it was a beatdown. Both of those fights were good, but I think Graves showed the most improvement out of anybody.
Yeah, because after that first night, everyone was kind of writing him off, and he seemed to get in a funk, too. I mean, there's a time and a place to drink, but I would think when you're in a situation like that, maybe you should live clean because, you know, you could be in there tomorrow. And he came back in that final and was just outstanding. Semifinal, you know, the the week before to keep top team in the running and even the score up. Yeah, that was classic.
And we had Jorge Masvidal beat Cesar Ferreira by knockout, 4-22 into the first round. It was a decent fight there from elbows and punches. Masvidal got the job done. Michelle Watterson was her UFC debut against Angela Magana. Well, actually, no, I think that was last night was a UFC debut fight for somebody. Anyway, Magana, I've never been impressed with her fight game, and she really didn't look good here. She ended up getting submitted by the rear naked choke. Never had a chance in this fight, never looked good, never just seemed to even look like she belonged in the UFC, I hate to say, but just I cannot figure out how people can, you know, go on the Ultimate Fighter and get all these opportunities and not take advantage of them and improve your game afterwards, you know? Like, she just doesn't have any advancement. Just does the same things and expects to be able to win. I don't get it, you know?
The old definition of insanity, huh?
So, she got another loss. I would not be surprised if she gets thrown out of the UFC at some point soon. And Maximo Blanco beat Mike De La Torre by knockout. 16 seconds into the first round. It was a quick one. Josh Salmon comes back, talking about an Ultimate Fighter guy. He came back against Kyle Magalhaes and beat him by rear naked choke submission. There was a little controversy in this fight. I think Kyle Magalhaes actually spit blood at Salmon after the fight. Pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. Not very classy. Anyway, Gerard Sanders beat Russell Doane by unanimous decision in the fourth fight of the night. Third fight of the night, Trevor Smith beat Dan Miller by unanimous decision. George Sullivan beat Dominic Waters by unanimous decision in the second fight of the night. And Willie Gates beat Daryl Montague by TKO in the first round, 136 into the fight. And finally, we have last night's UFC Fight Night 71 card from San Diego, California. Frank Mir beating Todd Duffy by Rock'em Sock'em Robot KO.
Yeah, that was a fight, and it was worth putting up with a lot of the slower ones before that. I have to question where Duffy's going now too, because, you know, he said he was in great shape, had no excuses, and he wanted the fight. Remember, he's the one that called out Mir. So then it got kind of personal, I guess, and Duffy kept saying it's really not. He's just another notch on my belt and another way I can move up. And Mir really took it personal. So
yeah.
he had a good – and then if you caught it, did you see it, Rich?
Yes.
Okay, well, you remember, as he said after the fight, he said that – He got, because I kind of figured Mir would be a little more defensive in the first round, but no, he was just going at it. He said, you just can't let this guy build up a head of steam, and boy, he sure didn't. And there were a couple of times Mir was pretty rocked, too.
Yeah, he actually took some punches right to the chin, and I was surprised. He didn't even get wobbly. He just kind of walked through them.
Well, I think Mir is definitely back, and, you know, he's had to reinvent himself so many times. You remember before he fought Shane Carwin, he decided he was going to try to be a power lifter. And all he did in his training was he was doing his big heavy deadlifts. Well, that's great for fighters in MMA. I mean, deadlifting is a great thing, but you're not going to outlift Shane Carwin. You know? And it seemed like Frank went through so many of those metamorphoses, forphoses. But maybe he's really going to put it together. I mean, it just so far he's looked great because he's always had the submissions, and now he's added the stand-up game. So we'll see where he goes.
Guess who he wants to fight next?
Oh, he's already called someone out. Who?
Fedor.
Oh,
Fedor.
Oh, okay.
Coming out of retirement, sort of broke yesterday. There's no news on who he's signing with, but, you know, the last fight he was at was a Bellator fight, so it kind of makes sense. And it's
well,
got poker
yeah,
and all
I, yeah, especially with the history of Fedor and Dana. So I can't see that, but yeah, that would be a kind of a challenging fight for Fedor. I mean, you'd think he'd want to come back with someone a little lower level, you know?
Yeah. I'm thinking Kimbo. Again, Kimbo.
Well,
you know, that's natural.
Well, I'll tell you what. You tell me you wouldn't be watching that one. I mean, Kimbo may not be the most skilled guy in the world, but he attracts crowds for sure. So, yeah, I think that would that would be wild.
Now that I think about it, too, maybe Frank Mir is hinting that he's going to go to Bellator, too. I want to fight Fedor. He's not even in the UFC. Oh, well. Okay, I'm going to Bellator. Tony Ferguson beat Josh Thompson by unanimous decision in the co-main event. This was ugly, sloppy, disgusting, just blood everywhere on Thompson. But showed a lot of heart, you know. You can't give him...
I mean, he showed the kind of heart that is just, you know, that old cliche, unteachable. Lesser guys would have, I mean, especially in that second round, I mean, he couldn't do anything to stop that onslaught from Ferguson. And you'd think he would have been broken mentally, but, boy, he came out in the third round and really tried to make a fight out of it.
And he almost got a knockout in the last few seconds with a spinning back kick, too. So.
Yeah. I mean, he's an old cagey veteran. I don't know what his future is like now at 36 at the lightweight division, but see where it goes. But I'll say this much, too, about Ferguson. Maybe it wasn't that Josh was looking so bad, but maybe it was just Ferguson just controlled the show.
Yeah, I mean, Ferguson hasn't really been tested that much. He's kind of gotten a bunch of, you know, not necessarily opponents, but people that he was matched up very well with. And Thompson was the most experienced person he's faced. So I think he just had a little bit of adjustment. And then once he started to figure out his range and, you know, what he could get away with, Thompson just didn't have an answer for it. And Thompson is, I mean, he's been around a long time, but he hasn't adapted quite as much as he should have over the years to the new stuff. You know? Kind of stuck with a lot of the techniques, and you know, sometimes it works, but not all the time.
I believe he started his career in 2001, and if you say it's going to be like say between 18 months and 2 years for the next generation of fighters, you can only imagine the evolution since those days. So but I'll tell you what, just his heart was inspirational. I mean, he just would not quit.
And Holly Holm got another win, stayed undefeated against Marion Renault, and lots of kicks in this fight. Kicks a lot for defense more than offense, I think, just to keep Renault back and prevent her from going for the takedown.
I know Holly's doing her best, but you know, with the buildup she had, we were kind of hoping for a Mike Tyson type. And
yeah.
I guess she used to be a pro boxer, but she didn't really use many hand techniques. I mean, I didn't quite understand that. So I don't know. I mean, hey, I know she's in there trying. I like her attitude. I know she'll be back, but. You remember when she was signed, everyone said, well, this will be Ronda Rousey's toughest fight. Well, I'm not seeing that yet.
Right. Yeah, and she apologized herself, you know, saying that it wasn't quite the performance she wanted. And, you know, she really was fighting defensively most of the fight. I mean, obviously she was scoring points offensively too, but... You know, a lot of her kicks and punches were just kind of to make sure Renault couldn't do anything to her more than to knock her out or, you know, stop the fight. She was just basically trying to score points and keep Renault at a distance. So maybe if her mentality was, hey, I need to go out and knock somebody out, it would be different. But she's just so technical in her game planning and, you know, from all that boxing experience, too, where you have to fight over 12 rounds. All those championship bouts that she fought, she's got to have that mentality stuck in her brain of, you know, this is going to take a while. You know, because I don't think she's had a lot of knockouts in her boxing career, but, you know, it's not going to come easy for MMA.
Exactly. And there's a time to be technical, but then there's a time to really hit the accelerator. and just didn't see it last night.
So we'll see. I mean, I think she's got to go against somebody a little bit more top-notch who's going to test her to really bring that animal out of her, I guess. But there's still time. I mean, this is only her second UFC fight, so.
You know, I kind of liked her bizarre way of breaking the guard, you know, because some people, you don't see this too much now, but in the early days, guys would get in a clinch and then jump guard. And
yeah.
she really had that down pretty good, the way she was getting out of that. I'll give her credit on that. But I know she had the big edge on the feet, but she seems very reluctant to go to the ground.
Right.
So I'd like to see a little more of her ground game.
Her strength was wrestling and submission, so that was kind of the reason for that. But somebody else, less caliber, jiu-jitsu game, she might try to test that. Is what it is. Manny Gambarian versus Scott Jorgensen. That was a fight that was all over the place. Manny got the unanimous decision there. Just a lot better striking, a lot more organized as a style, period. Jorgensen was just all over the place. Really sloppy. Just couldn't seem to get anything going. No rhythm.
Yeah, that was a bad performance. And as far as Manville, I knew he had dropped down to featherweight. But this was a surprise because, you remember, he made his debut at lightweight. So he's 20 pounds lighter. Well, maybe apparently it's worked out for him pretty good.
And Kevin Lee took out James Montessori by rear neck and choke submission about 3 minutes into the first round. That was a pretty decent fight.
That was quite an interview after the fight. You think Kevin Lee needs a little more self-confidence? What do you think? You heard the interview, right?
Yeah. Basically, I knew it was going to happen like that.
Yeah.
Alex Spann had a little bit of a struggle, but beat up Matt Dwyer. He ended up kneeing him to the head while he was down at one point, but they didn't disqualify him. I think they took a point away, but... ended up winning the fight by unanimous decision. And we had Sam Cecilia beat Yautzen Meza by unanimous decision. It's a good show for Sam. It was kind of a boring fight, but it is what it is. And then the one that I really was pissed off watching was Jessica Andrade versus Sarah Morris. Now, here's another girl from The Ultimate Fighter. You'd think that she would improve her game. You know, she's been given a UFC shot, even though she didn't win the show. She's had a couple of fights so far as I know, in the UFC, after The Ultimate Fighter. She goes in there against Jessica Andrade, and she's doing everything the basic style, you know, 1-2 punches, not a single kick, not a single knee. Nothing. Her corner was even telling her to throw a knee, and she wasn't throwing knees. I just don't get it. I mean, her reach was so much better than Andrade. Just does not make any sense to me why she wouldn't be throwing body kicks, head kicks. And she's got that kind of thick build for the weight. She's not like cut or muscular. So, you know, in that situation, you've got to use what you have as an advantage there. And your advantage is going to be your leg, kicking the leg or kicking the body, kicking the head. You know, use your leg. That's your reach. And you put all your weight behind it.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that one. Did she try any takedowns?
Sarah? Yeah, she kept. That was the other thing. She kept trying to go for takedowns, and Andrade would stuff them every time. And she would just go in and keep trying for a takedown, and then end up on the ground and getting her face smashed in.
Okay, so in other words, is it safe to say she wasn't setting up these takedowns? She was just bum rushing in?
She looked to me like she didn't even belong in a professional fight. You know, she looked like she should go back to the amateurs.
Well, yeah, because, you know, you got that old saying about a fighter's IQ. I'm talking about the fight IQ, not necessarily the normal IQ. And in her case, it seems like her fight IQ is low, and maybe her regular IQ isn't up to par either. If you've got a corner that's giving you good advice, and she either wouldn't listen to them or couldn't listen to them, but either way, I mean, you'd have to think you could see her try to do what her corner was telling her, right?
Right. And she did better on the show, I think, than she did last night. She looked better anyway. Huh. Looked like her technique was a lot smooth on the show. She had a couple wins. Doesn't make much sense to me that she didn't improve at all. Then we had Ronnie Yaya beat Masanori Kanahara, split decision in the fourth fight of the night. Sean Strickland beat Igor Araujo by unanimous decision. Kevin Casey beat Ildemar Alcantara by unanimous decision. And the first fight of the night, Lyman Good beat Andrew Craig by knockout in the second round at the 3:37 mark. And since we've hogged the whole first part of the show with MMA, we'll deal with UFC Fight Night 72 a little bit later. Let's get to some boxing. Ruslan Chagaev beat Francesco Pianetta on Saturday from Germany in the first round with a knockout. So he improves to 33-2-1. Pianetta takes his first loss in this one. 31-1-1 is his record now. And Chagaev has the WBA World Heavyweight title. So who knows? Maybe we'll see the winner of Fury versus Klitschko against Chagayev.
Chagayev's got skills. You know, he's the guy that's like, he's never, hard to say, you know, something's just lacking with him. And I mean, I've never seen him put it all together. But he's a threat to anybody out there, you know, especially if he comes in, you know, with his head right.
Yeah. Okay, what else we got for results?
Like I said, I didn't get to really see anything last week because I was out Saturday night. I was at a concert, you know, which, and you know, anything I go to, I'll make interesting.
Hmm. Big fight this weekend. Arthur Abraham fighting Robert Stieglitz for the WBO super middleweight title. I just got skipped away from it. I sent to the record some random guy. Here it is. And Arthur Abraham versus Robert Stieglitz. Abraham is 42-4. Stieglitz is 47-4-1. And that's the main event of this card in Austria. No, Germany. But it's the Austrian Boxing Federation. We're seeing this one. Nothing else really crazy on this card. Let's see what we got. The first page, we got skipped to the second page there. That's coming up. We still haven't got to all the results yet for some reason. Skipped ahead to the schedule. All right, let's see what we got. Coming up on Friday, anything Friday night? Let's see. Here's the big one in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, on Friday on Showtime, Showbox, I guess. It's a Kaufman Promotions deal. Travis Kaufman's father there.
Yep, I know Travis and Marshall both.
And Vito Milnicki of GH3 Promotions is co-promoting it. Antoine Douglas is in the main event against Istvan Szilli. Douglas is 17-0-1. Szilli is 18-0-2. Also on the card, somebody's O's got to go. By the way, that main event is for the vacant WBC Latino middleweight title in the vacant International Boxing Organization Intercontinental middleweight title. Derek Webster versus Arif Magomedov. Both guys undefeated. Webster is 19-0. Magomedov is 15-0. This one's for the vacant WBO NABO middleweight title.
Somebody's always got to go. Who's the power puncher there? Is it just KOs?
Does not list KOs on the schedule anymore, like it used to.
Yeah, it sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's what we want to see. I mean, and even if one guy has few KOs and another guy has a lot, that's cool too, because now we get a stylistic matchup.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And we got a couple guys with a few losses. Jerry Odom, 13-1, Samuel Clarkson, 14-3 at super middleweight. They're fighting for the vacant United States Boxing Organization super middleweight title. And then some real titles on the line here. Saying that jokingly, of course. And another O's got to go. Adam Lopez, 12-0. Alicier Aquino, 17-0-1. This is a super bantamweight fight. And the vacant WBC Latino super bantamweight title and the vacant WBA Fedolatin super bantamweight title are on the line there. Real titles, right? Okay, what else we got? And we're back to results. Next Friday stuff. That's not results.
The box trick is a bitch to get through now.
All right, we're back to the schedule. For Saturday, what do we got on Saturday? Big fight over in the UK, Manchester Arena. Scott Quigg at super bantamweight fighting Kiko Martinez. Quigg has 30 wins, 0 losses, 2 draws. Kiko is 32-5. And this one's for the WBA World Super Bantamweight title. Darlys Perez is in the co-main event against Anthony Crolla at lightweight. Perez is 32-1. Crolla is 29-4-2. And that one's for the WBA World Lightweight title. And third fight of the night, our third co-main event, I guess, is Sam Eggington, 15-2, versus Glenn Foote, 15-0. It's at welterweight for the vacant BBBFC British welterweight title and the Commonwealth British Empire welterweight title. And then another supporting bout worth mentioning here, we've got Chris Jenkins, 16-0, at super lightweight, fighting Tyrone Nurse, who's 31-2. That one is for the vacant BBBFC British super welterweight title. Super lightweight title, sorry. Let's see what else is going on. Holy crap. Talk about an opponent. There's a guy on here fighting in the United Kingdom in London on Saturday in another card. I think we've talked about this guy before. Christian Laight. L-A-I-G-H-T. Guess what his record is?
Yikes.
9. And actually, 9 wins, 200 losses, 7 draws.
Where is this taking place at? Is this overseas?
In London.
London.
Out of 200
losses,
he only has 5 knockout losses, though.
Well, you know, we complain a lot about the commissions. You know, I mean, we complain a lot about the commissions in this country, but, you know, there's been some stories I've heard from England that it's just horrible with some of these guys. It just, I don't know, I mean, maybe they feel they have a right to make a living, but... Man, 9-200. How many draws does the guy have, or what's that?
7 draws, and okay. He really only had 4 6 round fight. So to his defense, I guess.
Okay, wow, 200. Man, you know, you'd have to think at some point that thought has to cross your mind. Maybe I'm not really cut out for this. Might need a new vocation, you know.
Right.
Maybe I think the thought's crossing his mind is why ain't I ranked in the top 10? I
well,
got 9
maybe,
wins.
Yeah. Maybe he's been hit a lot harder than it seems. Yeah. Wow, that's just flat out horrible. And I guess the commission, you know, even with an age situation, I know when I was writing for Pro Boxing Update, and there was a guy, Ralph Moncrief, and he was in his early 50s then, and they were letting him fight. And the matchmaker was telling me there's really not much the commission could do to get into some anti-age discrimination things. But this would be competency. I mean, 200 losses, geez. Well, I'd be anxious to see if he's on YouTube. I'd like to see him in action.
Tom is his biggest fan. We also have Amir Imam fighting Fernando Angulo on Saturday on Showtime. It's also the return of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fighting Marcos Reyes. Imam is 17-0 at super lightweight. Angulo is 29-9-0. It's at super lightweight for that main event. And then Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is 48-2-1. Reyes is 33-2. Of course, Chavez's last fight was a disaster, so hopefully he's... somebody's O's got to go in the third supporting bout here. Mikjoe Arroyo is 16-0. He's fighting Arthur Villanueva, who's 27-0. That one's for the vacant IBF World Superflyweight title. And that's not even enough. We've got Carl Frampton also on the card. He's 20-0, fighting Alejandro Gonzalez Jr., who's 25-1-2. That one is for the super bantamweight IBF World title. Pretty big deal. And Chris Areola, former guest of ours, is on this card too. He's 36-4, fighting Fred Cassie, who's 18-3. And of course, Areola was on Premier Boxing Champions last time we saw him and did not look that great, even though he did get the win. So hopefully he improves this time around. And Rantes, his little brother, is on this card as well, taking on a very seasoned opponent, LeDuane Barthelemy. I think it's his little brother. His older brother, I think, is all done fighting. But his older brother's got a gold medal from the Olympics, so something that Rance never was able to get. But LeDuane, he's 5-0. He's fighting German Moraz. He's 49-35-1. What's that for a record?
Lots well, at least more wins than losses. So
exactly. Okay, we get into Sunday. Got a whole lot going on. Okay, last Saturday. WBO World Light Flyweight title was on the line in Cebu, Philippines on last Saturday, and Donnie Nietes won the fight. He's 35-1-4 now over Francisco Rodriguez Jr., goes to 17-2-1 there. And also on that card, the vacant IBF Youth Featherweight title was on the line between Mark Magseo and Rafael Reyes. Magseo stays perfect at 10-0. Reyes drops to 16-4. And KO victory for Magseo. Yes. And we had somebody's O had to go in Manchester last weekend, the United Kingdom, but the fight actually was stopped in the second round. Terry Flanagan was fighting Jose Zepeda there. Flanagan was 27-0. Zepeda was 23-0. But the Pata ended up getting a dislocated left shoulder and stayed at his, on his stool at the second round.
Well, that doesn't sound fun.
No. And then the co-main event there, Jack Catterall stayed undefeated in 11-0 against Gabriel Fernando Punalef Calfin. Heck of a name. 22-6-3 is his record now. Okay, where's the U.S. stuff? Come on. Here it is. Hank Lundy's fight card from Los Angeles on Saturday. Hank lost to Mauricio Herrera, who goes to 21-5. Hank falls to 25-4-1 and loses his opportunity to get the NABF super lightweight title. Herrera is now. Joseph Diaz, also on the card, stays undefeated at 16-0 against Jorge Alvarado. Falls 22-4 at featherweight. And we have the vacant WBO NABO lightweight title on the line. Michael Perez won that. He goes up 22-1-2 against Luis Sanchez, who fell to 17-3-1. And Willie Nelson lost also on Saturday.
He was in the road again, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was smoking too much, I think. Tony Harrison got the TKO in round 9. This was one that I caught the very end of, and it was a heck of a performance by Harrison coming out of nowhere to get that knockout. So he goes to 21-0. Willie falls to 23-2-1. And the main event there was Keith Thurman versus Luis Collazo. And as I said at the beginning of the show, there was a little bit of controversy there as far as what happened with Luis. Supposedly the blood in his eye was too much for him. He kept telling the doctor he couldn't see. So they called off the fight, and they said that he retired, which I don't know if that was really what he wanted to do, what he wanted to happen, but he didn't really seem too broken up about it after the fight. No, he did seem to be making...
Yeah, Rich, I don't mean to interrupt you, but... Tony Harrison was knocked out in that fight.
Oh.
It was Willie Nelson won.
Nelson, right. Whoops.
Right. Yeah, Tony Harrison, Nelson won.
Yeah, Nelson won. That's right. You're right.
Okay.
Excuse me, because Box X the L there instead of the W, and the L is right next to Willie's name, so.
Yeah. No, Harrison though, was doing a pretty good job there for a good bit of it, but... Nelson hung in there, so.
So, sorry about Willie. Tony is actually, I guess, they don't have the updated records on here, so I shouldn't be saying that he improved or fell to whatever. But it still has Tony Harrison as 21-0, even though he lost. So he's obviously 21-1 now, and Nelson is 24-2-1. So I got to do some addition here. Keith Thurman improves to 26-0 against Luis Collazo, who goes to 36-7. That one was for the WBA World Welterweight title as well. Edna Cherry also on the card beat Luis Cruz. Cherry goes up to 34-6-2. Cruz falls to 21-4-0. And also, Walter Castillo won his fight against Anmeth Diaz. Castillo improves to 26-3. Diaz falls 32-12. Anything else? We missed. Yeah, that's probably about it. Nothing going on Friday. Yeah, that's it for results. Let's see what we got for news in the pipeline here. Breaking news we've got tonight. Got my Google alerts. See if anything pops out there. Guillermo Rigondeaux, this one, agrees to fight Vasily Lomachenko at 126 pounds.
That's interesting.
Very interesting. Videos going viral over the week, last couple of weeks. Jake Gyllenhaal talking about how he trained for the movie Southpaw. He played a guy named Billy Hope in that movie. It's coming out later this month. And looks pretty jacked up for the film, so obviously he was doing something right. Said he did 2,000 sit-ups a day.
Wow.
Manny Pacquiao. His routine. Carl Froch retiring from boxing this week. So I guess
I heard
the big fight with Gennady Golovkin is off. Not going to happen. So I'll have to wait for another opponent for Gennady. Carl's actually going to work for Sky Sports as a boxing pundit now. But he announced his retirement just this week. He twice won the WBC title, as well as WBA and IBF belts. He won 33 of his 35 fights, with 24 coming by knockout. And his last fight turned out to be the fight against George Groves. Turned out to be his final fight in May. And he says, I have nothing left to prove, and my legacy speaks for itself. Nothing can replace the thrill of stepping into the ring. Said, it's been a year. It's too long. The fighting machine has gone. It's not going to come back. It's still hard. The last thing I think about before my head hits the pillow is boxing. And when I wake up in the morning to think what time it is, I think it's half six, 7 o'clock. Should I be going for a run? Where's my trainers? It's a lifestyle, a way of life, and it's a mindset. I'll always have that, and I think I'll always be itching for the big fight. There's no greater feeling for me than standing victorious in the arena, and I'm never going to get that again now, and I don't know where I'm going to get that feeling from. I don't know where it's going to come. Maybe not. Maybe it's not. That's what I'm turning my back on, and that's what's going to be difficult to do. But there comes a time in every man's career where he's got to say, that's it, and that's enough. I feel civilized now. I feel like Carl Froch, the fighting machine, is still in there. The fire is still in the belly, but it's been too long. I just feel like that fighting machine that I love so much and that I need to be to compete at the top level, I feel like it's been put away for too long, and I don't know if I can get a hold of him again and go one more time. I really don't think I could. So, he also said he's got kids and he wants to spend time with them, and that's it. And as I mentioned, Fedor Emelianenko says he's coming out of retirement after spending 3 years away from the game. He said he's coming back for another MMA run. Russian website Union MMA broke the story. 38 years old, Emelianenko says he's maintained his physical peak. And he's worked a little bit to help develop Russian MMA behind the scenes, but now he wants to step back into the cage. Says, during my time at the ministry, I was able to work on the development of the sport, work closely with the presidents of sports federations, recognize the problems from within the sport, and as far as possible, try to solve them. But now I feel that it is time to return to the ring. And he has not decided where he's going to go yet, but as I said, the place where it would make the most sense for him to go would be Bellator, unless he just goes right into M1 again. You know, that's always been his promoter, so that would make sense too. M1 Global. But I really think because he was at that last Bellator fight ringside, that's what really changed his mind about everything, that Shamrock fight. Maybe they'll put him in against Shamrock, who knows? Well, I think Shamrock should stay at light heavyweight. He can make it.
Yeah.
Shane Mosley coming out of retirement as well. I don't know if you heard this one, Tony. Guess who he's fighting?
You know what? I did hear this. Oh, my God.
Mayorga. 41-year-old Mayorga versus 43-year-old Shane Mosley.
it's a rematch. Yeah, they fought a couple years ago, and it was like a pretty sloppy fight. Then Maiorga just quit because he said he hurt his hand or something.
Right.
Yeah, the first fight wasn't that good, and I doubt the second one will be any better.
Right. And the best part of this whole story is, Shane Mosley's description of how this happened, how this got put into a rematch. And he says Maiorga was talking shit, and I ran into him in Vegas. Things escalated, and boom, rematch.
That happens sometimes.
Yeah. Just talking shit, like Maiorga obviously does a lot of.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do that. And Mosley's actually been working more as a trainer lately for his son, Shane Mosley Jr., who's 4-1 with 4 knockouts and actually has a fight coming up. And he's only been off for 22 months, so not that long of a layoff there, a couple years almost. He says, I'm in the best shape of my life. I feel bad for Maiorga. No one knows how good I really am. I'm going to kill him. He said he's been mouthing off on Twitter for months now. He needs to be shut up. If there's anybody that needs his ass kicked, it's him. The time for hiding his ass on social media is over. I'm ready to beat him just like I did last time. Maiorga is a beer-swilling, butt-smoking asshole, and I'll fight him as soon as he can stumble into the ring.
Whoa!
I'll beat him again.
So you're trailing, you know?
I'm going to give him a beating for his tweeting, little Muhammad Ali.
tell him not to hold your thing back.
Both fighters also predicted knockouts on social media, Mosley saying it's going to be in the 6th round, and Maiorga stepping up and saying that he'll knock Mosley out in the 2nd round. Mosley said, I'm quitting less, but I want to give a real show, all action and all the time on this one. All action all the time on this one. I plan to surprise a few people. I'm younger than Bernard Hopkins and more deadly. They had planned to have the fight August 29th at the Staples Center, but Mosley said, Al Haymon found out and booked the venue up from up and under me. All good, though. We got pay-per-view locked in. So I guess it's true. Al Haymon is booking arenas left and right and then canceling out. But I guess ESPN is going to be doing a card on August 29th as well at the Staples Center. So this is an actual event that he booked it for. That's Leo Santa Cruz and Abner Mares fighting there. Maiorga stands at 31-8-1 with 25 KOs. He won a welterweight belt in 2002, beating Andrew Lewis in a rematch, but really made his name in 2003 when he knocked out Vernon Forrest in the 3rd round to unify the titles. They outpointed Forrest in an immediate rematch. But then Maiorga lost the decision to Corey Spinks for the undisputed title later in 2003 and eventually claimed a vacant junior middleweight bout, but never got back on top. And it just turned out to be a good, they call it heel in wrestling, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? The one boxing magazine, Ring Magazine, said it best. When Maiorga had the win, I forget if it was Fernando Vargas or who he would beat. And they said it best, like, the heel's got to win every so often to keep it interesting. And because if the heel loses every time, then he's not a really good heel.
Right. Well, let's see what else we got going on. As I mentioned, we got Vasily Lomachenko versus Guillermo Rigondeaux agreed to at 126 pounds. Vasily Lomachenko is the WBO featherweight champion as well. Rigondeaux's camp had originally suggested 124 pounds would be the catch weight, but after further negotiations, they compromised with the addition of a rehydration clause. The Cuban, who holds the WBA Super and WBO belts at 122 pounds, is managed by Graham Hyde, who told World Boxing News, Lomachenko's manager, Igis Klimas, is very interested in this charge fighting Rigo. He agrees with me that it's best fight out there for both fighters. He wants to fight at 126, but I wanted a rehydration clause of 134 on fight night, which he has now agreed to. We didn't get the fight at 124, but the most important thing for us is what weight Loma would be on fight night. And he also said, when you take Nonito Adonair's weight of 140 when he fought Rigo into account, 134 is much more favorable to us. I relayed this to Rigo, and we'll make an announcement soon. Let's see what else we got. Mike Tyson was ringside at the UFC event last night, too. Been in the news a little bit.
I think I saw a picture of Mike Tyson and Ronda Rousey together.
Yeah, there's an article here about Mike Tyson sees himself in Ronda Rousey's UFC dominance. I hear my Google alerts. From KTBS, wherever that is, there's a picture of Mike Tyson got a fist bump at the gym. I don't know what the article is all about, but... let's just go to UFC Fight Night 72 now. I don't really have a lot of other news events. I did want to talk a little bit about Teddy Atlas's take on Premier Boxing Champions. I think I sent both of you guys that article. But let's just go over these, preview these fights first. We got Bisping versus Elias Leites in the main event. Bisping is 26-7. Leites is 25-4. And Leites was out of the UFC for a little while, but since he's been back, he's been unstoppable. So this is a big test for Bisping. But Bisping's basically at home for this fight. He's going to have a lot of support from the crowd. He's going to be on his home continent. So I think it's going to be his fight to win or lose. But, sometimes you can't argue with a streak. Yeah, let's see. Let's count them up. From Tor Trone to Tim Boach, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 wins in a row. And only 3 of those wins were not in the UFC. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight fights in the UFC's one. Pretty good stuff. We also have Ross Pearson in the co-main event against Evan Dunham. Pearson is 17-8. Dunham is 15-6. And this is a good style matchup here. I think both guys are the type to try to fight on the feet as much as possible. So it should be a real interesting slugfest. And Joanne Calderwood from The Ultimate Fighter. She's back in action here, also on her home continent. She's 9-1, fighting Courtney Casey, who's 4-1. We also have Ilir Latifi, 9-4, fighting Hans Stringer, who's 22-6-3. Leonardo Mafra Teixeira, 12-2, fighting Stephen Ray, 17-5. Joseph Duffy, 13-1, fighting Ivan George, who's 26-4. Marcus Brimage, 7-4, fighting Jimmy Rivera, who's 16-1. Robert Whiteford, 11-2, fighting Paul Redmond, who's 10-5. And Leon Edwards in the fourth fight of the night, he's 9-2, fighting Powell Poblak, who is 11-1. And third fight of the night, Patrick Holahan, 11-1-1, fighting Vaughn Lee, who's 14-10-1. Second fight of the night, Daniel Omelancic, 16-5-1, fighting Chris De La Rocha, who's 3-0. And then the first fight of the night is Timu Pakalin, undefeated at 7-0, fighting Michael Labute, who is 13-4-1. Yeah, I guess they were at the Glendale Fighting Club. Just after Mike Tyson showed up there to work with Rousey, she threw him on the ground with an enormous bang, according to this article. And Mike was pretty unsettled, he says. His eyes widened in awe while Rousey repeatedly hip-tossed Justin Flores with the same brute skill. Former heavyweight champion finally spoke up. "It just doesn't look fun no more," said. "It's fun for me," Rousey replied. "I don't know about him." Although the 49-year-old Tyson is years removed from any interest in competition, he saw shades of himself in the UFC's most authoritative champion when he dropped in to meet Rousey this week. Tyson's watched Rousey's fights for a couple years, but he hadn't seen her training work up close. "Rhonda, she's a lady," he said. "Polite, kind, sweet, and adorable. But her whole barometer is she's a killer. She has that killer aura. Anything is capable of happening." Whoa, that's exciting. Before the fight even starts, I think of myself when I watch her. Rousey's 11-0, of course, and she's the only women's bantamweight champion in UFC's history. And champion, well, about 10 of her 11 opponents in the first round, and has been a big fan of Tyson for years. She says Tyson, or actually Dana White said, "Tyson is like the god of war. When people see him at their fights, they freak out. They love fighting in front of him." Actually, one of the guys at the UFC event last night apologized for not being a better boxer with Mike Tyson sitting there. He was Sam Cecilia. It's kind of funny. Rousey said, "It's very humbling, and I was just honored that he would go through the trouble or go out of his way to watch me train. I'm really glad he was able to come, but it won't be until after I beat Betch and go home and go back to the hotel and look at myself in the mirror for the first time, like he was saying. That's the moment it all hits you. He knows better than anyone what that moment was like. Tyson knows that Rousey can handle it, though. He says, "Listen, if you want to become anything close to being a god, the first thing you've got to know how to do is how to decimate. If you're a god, you have to know how to decimate, and that's what she does. It would be very easy for her to have a big head to say, 'I can beat anybody in this world.' I don't know, maybe she's a likeness of God." Whoa. Deep thinking from Mike Tyson. Who would have thunk it? Cool. All right. As I mentioned, Teddy Atlas sent you this link. Had a lot to say about premier boxing champions. And as we mentioned last week, there's a lot of controversy surrounding this organization with whether what they're doing is, number one, fully legal, and number two, whether it's trying to create a monopoly or really just trying to improve the sport of boxing. But Teddy had some surprising things, I think, to say. He really glossed over the lawsuits big time. He just kind of almost changed the subject. But they talked to him right before the Premier Boxing Champions debuted on ESPN. He's looking at it, of course, you know, tempered comments because he's part of it. So he can't really talk bad about it. But, you know, he was a little bit critical of some of it, you know, saying that, you know, the fans have to come. If they don't come, then it's not going to work. He said it's making boxing feel more relevant, and that's the answer in a nutshell. The ratings have been good. TBC on NBC has averaged more than 3 million viewers for two cards so far, and the fights have been exciting. But Atlas said there's another side to the story of bringing boxing back to its glory days. He says, "It reminds me of that silly Kevin Costner movie that was fun to watch, Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. Heyman kind of built it, and the people came. I don't know if they're going to stay. You have to continue to put on competitive fights. He has around 200 guys signed up. A lot of them are good fighters, but they're not all at the same level. Some are more of the opponent level. If you continue to put the good ones in with the good ones, the people will watch it. I just don't know when you're going to run out of that, though. You put the good ones in with not-so-good ones," Atlas warns, "some of the luster will wear off." He says, "If you don't stay true to that formula of the top guys fighting the top guys, I think the people will leave." That's the sequel to the Kevin Costner movie. "I just hope we don't get the sequel because we only saw the first one. If you build it, they will come. We don't want to see the one where if you don't build it right, they will leave." I don't want to see that sequel, he says. I don't want Al Heyman to see that sequel because we're partners with Al now. I hope we can give the people reason to stay because Heyman has gotten people's attention back to a sport that had been gone for a long time. And Atlas says boxing should be in the national conversation because it is a special sport. And this is actually something he said almost word for word to me in our interview. He said, for me, the specialness in this sport is that no matter what you come from, your ethnicity, your religion, your race, whatever your background is, who your parents are, what part of the country you grew up in, no matter how much you've suffered, whatever, if you have it in your heart, in your spirit, in your body to prepare yourself hard enough and drive yourself long enough, on one given night, you can get in that ring and make the world fair, and that's pretty damn good. On that given night, if it means enough for you and you've prepared yourself enough for it, you can get in there and you can get your hand risen and be called the best in the world. I think there's powerful power to that. We'll be a little redundant there, but it's petty. He says, he also says, you don't see this in other sports as far as the promotional situation. Says where everybody has to play with each other for the benefit of the sport, because at the end of the day, it's going to hurt them if they don't, because they all have the same objective. If the sport's strong, their franchise is going to make money. That's a common denominator you don't have in boxing, because you have power brokers and everybody's fighting for a piece of the land, sort of the Wild West. I hate to say it because I've been in this business my whole life, but it is. There's no sheriff. The other sports have a national body, a strong, solid place for the rules to be laid out. Because at the end of the day, it's all about the sport. It's not about that in boxing, whether it's Arum or De La Hoya or Heyman. Everyone is their own separate power broker. They just want their little piece of land and then make it into a bigger piece of land, but they're not thinking about anything as far as the sport. They're going to make money as long as they have the power in their piece of land. It's not about a community, and there's nobody there to tell you that it is. There's nobody there to direct you. There's nobody in the schoolyard that's blowing the whistle and saying, now, fellas, come on. There's nobody in charge. There's separate power brokers, and this is America. You can still go out there and do pretty damn well. But he also says, I do sometimes think, when will the sport erode itself with all the infighting and the greed? These guys have the ability to control the judges. They have the ability to control the sanctioning bodies. And in baseball, you have a guy like Pete Rose. Tom's on the same wavelength tonight as Teddy. Pete Rose. You have a guy like Pete Rose who isn't allowed to... loud back in the sport because it hurts the credibility of the sport. And I look at boxing and I say, you know what? There is no fail-safe to protect the sport. There is no mechanism to make sure the integrity of the sport has been kept. And when you see these times when the integrity of the sport is so badly damaged and so badly attacked, you think the sport is going to suffer to the point where it can't regroup. But then what I said earlier might be the key. People will always be willing to watch two men get in that ring if you put the right men in the ring to find out who the best is.
You know what? I got to say this, and I was thinking about it earlier, and then I didn't get a chance to say it, and I just thought about it again when you mentioned his name. Why did Pete Rose get a lifetime ban from baseball?
For betting.
Betting, right. And first he said he bet on games that he wasn't involved in, right? Then he came out and he admitted that he bet on games that the Reds played in, but only two times. Now, let's look at the sport of boxing. I'm going to go back to 2001 here. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but I do. Bernard Hopkins was fighting Felix Trinidad, and he was a 3.5-1 underdog. And
right.
Hopkins sold advertising back to Golden Palace Casino for $100,000. And he took that $100,000 and bet it on himself in the fight at 3-1 odds. And you know what everybody said? Everybody said that that's brilliant. That's a great move. Well, basically, he bet on his own fight.
Right.
And Hopkins doesn't have any type of ban. I mean, if you were – and now, like I said, baseball is, you know, a lot harder to control in that measure than boxing is. Because if you're, like, a fighter, especially if you're the fighter, obviously, but if you're, like – the manager, the promoter, or you're somebody that has an inside track, and you bet against somebody, you might be able to pull them strings and get them to throw the fight. How many times did you see it way back in the day? It happened a lot. You know, in baseball, you know, okay, let's say Pete Rose is the manager of the Reds, and he bets against the Reds to lose a series game or whatever. And he can make bad moves as the manager. I mean, he can literally start his worst players that game. He can, you know, give all of his superstars the day off. And, boy, he can say, well, oh, that's pretty suspicious. But then again, at the same time, you see a lot of times, you know, now the Phillies are not a good team right now, but even a few years ago, the two biggest superstars, Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, both get the same day off, and nobody batted an eye. So you could kind of influence it, but the fact of the matter is, the opposing batter still has to hit the ball. Your guys have to not hit the ball. And baseball is like a game like that's harder to control. You know, I think it's harder to control than football. As a coach, you know, a team, you know, has a really good, you know, run defense, and you keep running the ball instead of passing it, or vice versa. Or you have a quarterback with, you know, that's having, you know, a bad ankle or something, and you're not running the ball. You're calling pass plays, and they're annihilating your quarterback. You're more controlling that game than a baseball game would, because the baseball game, who calls the pitches? The catcher. You know? Who swings the bat? The batter. You know? If a batter hits a ball, you know, there's no guarantee that it's, you know, going to get caught or not caught. There's no guarantee where it's going to go. You know, I think baseball's a hard game to rig. So I think what they've done to Pete Rose is bullshit, and that's my long-winded way of saying it. And the way that Bernard Hopkins basically got praised for something Pete Rose got a lifetime ban for.
Yeah, that's not cool. But, yeah, I don't understand why they can't repeal that. You know, like, it's not like...
You know what? Look, the guy's all-time, you know, number one hits leader. The guy's an icon. I mean, he's an icon in Cincinnati. He came to Philadelphia. He's an icon in Philadelphia. You know, here's how great of a player Pete Rose was. Look at it like this. And obviously, he made his career in Cincinnati. But he did come to Philadelphia for a few years. Pete Rose number was number 14. When he came to Philadelphia, number 14 was retired for Jim Bunning. They unretired that number for Pete Rose. That says something, right?
Right. Yeah.
Now, also, I got to bring this up before I forget again. Well, again, I'm going to be on TV tomorrow night in the local Philadelphia area. So, you know, I'll try to get the clips, as I've done in the past, because we know I'm going to be on tomorrow night. Now, we had a thing at work. Now, my job, part of Independence Blue Cross, my personal company is located outside the city, about 30 minutes from my house. They want to move in the city. It's going to happen. They're not happy about it, but it is what it is. And they did a promotion today, which was, wear something to represent the city of Philadelphia. And they said it could be anything that represents Philadelphia. You know, it could be a sports team jersey. You know, it could be anything with a shirt that said Philadelphia on it. And everybody was expecting me to come in with the sequined hat on. I've even worn the cape there. And you know what? I said, I'm not going to do that. I said, because I've already given it to you people twice. I said, you expect new things from me. You expect better things from me. So I showed up today in an Italian stallion robe. I said, what's more Philadelphia than Rocky?
There you go.
You should have seen the jaws at the floor when I walked through that building today.
Awesome. Yeah, speaking of Rocky, we never really talked about Creed too much. I did see the trailer of that same episode where you did your own broadcast. And we talked about it. Tom and I talked about it a little bit, too. It's amazing to me how much that kid, Michael B. Jordan there, looks like Apollo Creed, the actor there played him.
The same Michael Jordan that we fought?
No. Obviously.
Different Michael Jordan? No, you're right. He does. Michael B. Jordan does resemble a young Carl Weathers. The one thing, and I'm still having a hard time. Now, the trailer, and I think I said it in my one-man podcast, the trailer maybe tried to, you know, give a little bit of background to it. I'm still having a hard time accepting the fact they're making it be Apollo's son, not his grandson. And I've said this a couple times. I mean, that makes the kid 29 years and 3 months old. because, you know, if he's Apollo's son, Apollo died in 2015, or 1985, it's now 2015. And we know, and people said, well, the Rock maybe don't have a great age continuity anyway. You know, he goes to Russia, his son's 8, he comes home, the kid's 13. He was gone 4 months, you know?
The thing is, say the year? Do they ever have the year on the show? On the screen?
What, when Apollo died, or when they're showing the Creed?
At any point in the Rocky movies, do they ever say?
Well, yes, and here's the way you can kind of follow the storyline a little bit. And this is me being a Rocky nerd here. Rocky, the first fight was set, you know, the first fight with Apollo was January 1st, 76. They had the rematch 11 months later, like in November of 76. And then during that interim, Rocky and Adrian were married, 1976. In Rocky V, before the whole fight before Apollo fights the Russian, they were having a party, and Rocky brought Adrian a cake, and she goes, "What's this cake for?" He goes, "It's our anniversary. It's almost been 9 years that we've been married." 1985.
There you go. Well,
come on, you're never gonna be able to bet this one over me. Come on, I'm that much of a nerd. But also at the same time, the one thing I could see about that could potentially be a funny line in this movie is, okay, you find that out, okay, the kid was born when? Okay, well then, and whether it's Apollo's wife, Marianne, now played by Mrs. Cosby, or if it's a child born out of wedlock, which means Apollo was an adulterer, either way, Rocky can say, well, shit, you were born when?
Yeah.
And so that means, okay, you were born 9 months after Apollo died, after he fought Drago? Damn it, you mean Apollo was messing around when he was supposed to be training for that fight? No wonder he died. Mickey always taught me women weaken legs.
Right.
Yeah. That would be the first line I wrote.
Yeah, and it's tough, though. I mean, when you have a series like that, it's really tough to keep everything tied together.
I would have liked it to have been his grandson. I mean, I think that would have been a little bit easier because, like, in the first movie, Apollo's two boys at the time are, like, 6-7 years old. So you figure that's now going to be, like, almost 40 years or 39 years. So to be a 20-ish-year-old son of one of those boys, I thought that would have been a great idea. But they want to go with the son. The one thing I do see in there that he has like an estranged relationship from his family, and I see like something about being in prison in there because it looked like he was shown like bars close, and maybe he was doing whatever. He was estranged from the family, went to prison for a while, and now he's trying to make everything right. That's maybe the reason of his advanced age. Only thing I can really accept.
Okay. Well, the other thing is too. I mean, it's. The fact that the actor looks so much like Carl Weathers, they had to make his son, I think. Because if they made him his grandson, it wouldn't make sense that he looked so much like him.
Well, I mean, he could. I mean, I have pictures of, like, you know, kids that look like their parents that look like their parents.
Right.
I mean, it's possible.
Possible.
I've seen it. So, also, on the Rocky lines, tomorrow night, I'll be going for my 5th appearance on Philadelphia Phillies broadcast this year. And I'm going down to the Italian Heritage game. And whether they win or lose, I really have no caring of. It's just me going to a game and acting like a buffoon. I'm changing my outfit up a little bit to put a little bit of an Italian theme with my outfit.
Yeah.
But also, the giveaway, and they're only giving away 1,500 of these, and I got the special passes to get one, is a plush Rocky figure wearing Philly's boxing gloves. You know, me holding one of them dressed like Apollo is going to get on TV.
All right. Well, we'll be looking forward to your next YouTube video then.
Yeah, well, I'm on YouTube probation right now, those bastards.
That's right. That's told me about.
I posted a video from the Kid Rock concert, and they're like, "Yes, it's about copyright." And I'm like, "No, it's not. I'll tell you what's in copyright. Copyright is me damn near falling in the mud and breaking my neck. That's a copyright."
Well, I think that's all we have for this broadcast. Next week we will definitely, I mean definitely, have a guest. I'm going to start with a
month. So like I said, I got to get back on my high horse and trying to, you know, push some people around and get them to be on our show.
Right. That would be nice. We are due for a boxing guy, so, or girl. So we'll try to do that. I don't know what happened with my contact with the UFC fighters, but she hasn't replied to me after I took too long with Sean Jordan, so maybe she's mad at me.
People are mad at me all the time, you know. I never read too much into it.
Well, anyway, we'll see if we can get somebody from her or somebody from boxing. We'll definitely have somebody for next week. And one more story I did not mention. I was going to, but I forgot. Matt Brown. A big win against the Meats. But before the fight, he had some comments about the new UFC drug testing policy. He was talking about the World Anti-Doping Agency's policy of suspending athletes 4 years for their first offense. But the USADA policy, which the UFC fighters are subjected to, is only a 2-year ban. It can only be upgraded to 4 because of aggravated circumstances. So Brown was not too happy about that 2-year ban instead of a 4-year ban. He says, "I find it ludicrous that they have a fucking standard for every other sport except for the one where you can get fucking murdered in a cage. People do die doing this shit, just not in the UFC. People haven't yet, fortunately. The day is going to come when it happens. We all know that. If it happens to someone who got beat by a known juicer, is that not going to be more of an issue? I don't want to be the dead one because the motherfucker was sticking needles in himself all day." So, very interesting comments from Mr. Immortal. I thought it was kind of funny, too. Tim Means' nickname was Dirty Bird. That's not a good name for a fighter.
No.
Dirty Bird. What does that mean? You're a dirty fighter? So that is definitely all for us, and we will have a guest for everybody next week. And we'll be coming back at the regular time of 8 o'clock. So, till then, that's all she wrote.
All right, Tony, make sure you get some videos, okay? Post them online.
I will try, absolutely.
All right, buddy.
Hey,
next
I'll send you guys some new pictures from me at work today.
I can post them on our YouTube for you, the Russian YouTube. I have access to that.
Okay.
Okay, guys. Enjoy the fight.
Yes, sir.
All right. I'll see you later, baby.
Bye.